Hi guys, welcome to our podcast, A Court of Heaven and Hell. I'm Lauren, aka Heaven.
And I'm Ellie, I'm also known as Hell.
And we are a book podcast currently focusing on the romantasy novel, A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. In this episode, we will be continuing our coverage of A Court of Thorns and Roses, chapters 23 through 35. The episode structure will be first having the plot summary, second, we'll do character discussions, third, any foreshadowing, and fourth, any theories and Maas-verse connections. That being said, we would like to go ahead and give a big spoiler warning. This episode will contain spoilers for any books in the ACOTAR series. In order to fully dive in, we will need to speak about the other books in this series, but only this series with the exception of our theories portion. If you have not finished her other works, you will be safe until the last part where we will give another big spoiler warning. So if you have not finished the five books currently out in this series, then make sure you save this video and come back when you're done.
We are an explicit podcast, so that means we will be cursing a lot and we talk about adult themes, including sexually explicit stuff. These books include that. Please see our show notes for content and trigger warnings. Please make sure to check out our first two ACOTAR videos. And if you're interested in hearing us talk about other Sarah J. Maas books, we have several episodes about Crescent City, including the newly released House of Flame and Shadow. Also, please make sure to follow us for future episodes where we will be reviewing and theorizing the rest of ACOTAR and other romantasy series. Finally, if you're watching this video, please like, comment, and subscribe, or rate and review us if you're listening on a podcast platform. We are still new at this, and it helps us so much, especially when y'all share us with your book bestie. So please make sure to do that. Yeah. Okay.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and get into the plot of ACOTAR, chapters 23 through 35. Starting off with chapter 23, we spend an afternoon with Tamlin and Feyre in the Enchanted Forest. Much teasing ensues, and Tamlin reveals his true non-glamored form to Feyre for the asking price of one kiss. Feyre is awed by his breathtaking beauty to the point of wanting to know how to break the curse because she needs to see this man in his full glory.
I don't.
After her vision goes, yeah, seriously. After her vision goes back to normal, she goes back to sleep, murmuring about how Tamlin is everything she dreamed he'd be. And he returns the sentiment. Is that even true? Like, no, I don't think you dreamed of a girl like Feyre. Like, you were literally stomping around pissed at her for the first 23 chapters of this book, or 22 chapters of this book. Anyways, so now we're in chapter 24, and Feyre wakes up the next day and is shocked by the appearance of everyone around her. When I say everyone, I mean everyone. Apparently, she's been surrounded by tons of fairies this whole time, and they look strange. Going to meet Lucien and Tamlin for breakfast, she finds out that Lucien has been busy, and Tamlin likes to kiss and tell. Tamlin reveals that he's been dry. It's now the next day, and Feyre finds a lovely surprise. Apparently, in true Joffrey fashion, the High Lord of the Night Court to play games featuring heads on spikes. Tamlin and Lucien don't know who the victim is, but they know that it's a message. Tamlin tells Feyre not to worry, she's still safe here, but even she knows it's a promise he can't keep. On now to chapter 25. It's summer, and Tamlin is still keeping secrets from Feyre. Feyre is going to the summer solstice festival, and her boyish clothes aren't gonna cut it. Alice dresses her up in a dress and does her hair, and all of a sudden the guys realize she's actually hot. We find out that Lucien isn't just sassy as fuck. He likes to play tricks. Their relationship is actually so cute. And in an act of surprise, Feyre chugs a glass of the devil's nectar, also known as fairy wine, and starts tripping balls. Drunk and dancing her heart out, she finds Tamlin playing the fiddle and realizes he's quite talented. Just to make sure I'm really uncomfortable, he serenades her with a personal solo before pulling her away from the party.
Wait. I just had a thought. This is giving Ken from the Barbie movie when he has his little Kens out and they're like, let me just play the guitar really quick, stare into my eyes. It's just, I don't know what it is. I'm really sorry if you're into that, but like, it's just thought for me. And I'm sorry. It's just, nope.
We need to make a meme out of that. I'm sure that scene has got to be somewhere in the memes. There needs to be a meme about that.
Oh, it's so good. It's true. Like, it's literally
so accurate. It's literally like him serenading her at the bonfire.
Yeah, Tamlin's kin. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. It's canon. It's canon. It's a canon event.
Okay.
All right. After showing her a light show in the meadow, they start engaging in some heavy petting, fitting since Tamlin's literally a dog, before he drags her off again for one last surprise. He shows her the sunrise, and Feyre acquiesced that she was wrong about there not being a better life. Then they're making out again. She's also still drunk at this part. Cute.
That's consensual.
Yeah. Moving on to chapter 26, it's breakfast time again, and Feyre and Tamlin are still horny as fuck after the events of last night, and only a recounting of dead children in the Winter Court can calm them down. Curiously, it seems the Night Court still isn't being affected by these tragedies. Speaking of the Night Court, is that their High Lord? Yes, the one and only Rhysand shows up to taunt Tamlin in his own home. As if this was a game of hide and seek, Tamlin tries to hide Feyre behind some curtains. After listening to them all trade insults and hearing about someone named Amarantha for the first time, Feyre is discovered due to some dishes in her half-eaten breakfast. Now the insults are coming her way. After some very rude comments comparing her to a pet and telling everyone in the room her deepest, darkest secrets, he makes sure to spread the love to Tamlin and Lucien by forcing them to bow before him. Finally done playing with them, Rhysand takes his leave, but not before asking Feyre for her name. Feyre's no dummy, so of course she doesn't give him her name. Instead, she gives them the name of one of Nesta's friends. Did I say that I like this guy? He's kind of a dick.
Yeah, he's definitely not his best in this moment. He's not.
No, I mean, I know he's doing it because, you know, there's reasons behind it. But yeah, every time I reread this scene, I'm like, God, he was really an asshole. When he was like forcing, not forcing, but like he went into Feyre's mind and starts talking about all the things she was like thinking about Tamlin doing to her. I was like, God damn, like this guy's kind of a fucking asshole. But anyways, then we move on to chapter 27. Tamlin is pissed after the events of the morning. So of course he starts having a temper tantrum. Feyre also doesn't feel well, so she retreats to her room to listen to Tamlin tear the place apart. After a little bout of silence, Tamlin comes creeping into the room to apologize to Feyre. He's still a little aggressive, but he's doing the right thing and sending her back home to protect her. Feyre doesn't want to go, and instead of thinking about the danger she's in, she questions if somehow she fucked up. She thinks she's difficult and says she's covered in thorns. Seeing how upset she is, he decides to make her feel better by lying to and having sex with her. Twice before telling her she's still gotta go, but he loves her, thorns and all. Chapter 28. The next day, after dressing her up like a porcelain doll, Alice wishes Feyre farewell. Lucien tells Tamlin he should give her a few more days, but he says no. He does tell her that he loves her, and she doesn't say it back. After being knocked out with magic again, she arrives in front of a gorgeous new estate, confused at first by her surroundings. She's greeted by Nesta and Elaine, the latter of which doesn't even recognize her at first. Once she does, she asks her if she ever got their letters and explains how a stranger came to their cottage and asked their father to invest his money for him, not to mention their missing fortune was coincidentally found as well. Elaine seems content, but Feyre notices Nesta seems kind of suspicious. She's not married either, meaning she didn't end up with Thomas.
So now we're in chapter 29, and Feyre remembers that she needs to keep up this appearance that there is an aunt named Aunt Ripley, because Tamlin glamored her family, and they think that this aunt is a person. So she's making up all these lies to them. Elaine is in her gardening era still. She's planting her flowers, and she tells Feyre how the last socialite season was really weird. She also just mentions, oh, Nesta actually went to see you. And Feyre is like, what? What do you mean? What do you mean? Yeah. She went to go see me. Like, that's literally impossible. I was very far away. Feyre has a little circle moment where she goes back to her cottage and just thinks about everything they've been through.
Yeah.
Now we're in chapter 30, and Farah, when she's by her cottage, she does something really nice. She stops by all the other cottages in, like, the poor area, and she gives some money to the families there, which is cute. We love her for that. While Farah's in town, she happens to run into Thomas, who, ew, he looks her up and down like a freaking creep. She also runs into her past fling, Isaac, and he is with the girl he was supposed to marry, and she says they look really happy, and she just, you know, accepts it, which, good for her. She now is in love with Tamlin, who is
He's moved on.
Yep. So, since Farah's home all of a sudden, the Archerons want to throw a ball in her honor. While her dad is planning this ball for her, Feyre's in the garden when Nessa comes to talk to her finally. Nessa tells her that she knows that there's no Aunt Ripley. What? How does she not know about this? She remembers everything. The glamour that Tamlin put on her family did not work on Nessa. She knows shit. She tells Feyre that actually her and the mercenary from like chapter 2 or 3 are the ones who went to go try to find her, but obviously they didn't. Feyre asks her why she didn't end up marrying Thomas, and Nessa says she realized he wouldn't have gone with her to find Feyre. And Feyre says, Thomas never deserved you, which true. He didn't.
Which is
fuck him.
Accurate.
Yeah, no, he sucks. I hope he dies. I'm assuming he... His death is canon for me. We're in chapter 31, and we're at the ball that Feyre's dad throws for her. And she just cannot stop thinking about Tamlin, the mediocre man. And she keeps having this feeling that he's in danger. Feyre learns that Claire Better, her family died in a fucking fire. I shouldn't be laughing at that. I'm so sorry.
Well, like I said, she kind of did just throw him to the wolves, literally.
She did.
She's like, oh, Claire Better.
But happens to be that Claire's body wasn't found. Feyre literally has a fucking panic attack. She's like, oh my God, what did I fucking do? Because she gave Claire's name to Rhysand. So she looks at Nesta and is like, you cannot tell anyone what I told you about the fairyland. Just act like I don't exist. I was never here. I'm not a person anymore.
Right.
And so Nessa helps her pack her bags because Feyre needs to go save her man. And during this, Feyre gives Nessa an info dump about the fairies just so that she has a little bit of information. Stuff like, oh, by the way, they can lie. Also, iron doesn't affect them at all. So,
good to know.
Yes, good to know. Good information since they were literally told that their whole life, and it's not even fucking true.
Not true at all.
So, Feyre leaves on her horse to try to find the wall, which she can't get through. So, she spends literally days going against the wall, and then she finally finds one of the gaps, and she makes her way in. She gets to the spring court, and she notices it is fucking empty. Oh. All right, chapter 32. These chapters are a lot.
Heavy. They're heavy.
They're heavy. There's a lot of info jumping, so bear with me, okay? It's going to be a lot happening. So Farrah's in the spring court. She is looking around, and she finds Alice. Alice is there still, and she asks her what happened, and Alice gives her the biggest info dump ever about Amarantha and the curse. So, a little short summary of this, because this is an important world building. Amarantha appeared 100 years ago as Hybern's emissary. She went court to court to talk to the High Lords about more trade between Hybern and Prithian. She was in the war with the humans and was Hybern's most lethal warrior. She had a younger sister named Clithia, who was just like her until she fell in love with a human named Durian. Durian? My gosh. Durian was using Clithia for information about Hybern's forces. He ended up killing her. Oop. After the war, Amarantha killed the humans that she enslaved and started to take over Prithian. She was super pissed that her sister was killed because of her love of a human. This is where all of this started, literally. She waited for so the misguided. Seven. Huh?
I said so misguided, but.
Yeah. She waited for the seven high lords to trust her, and then she threw a ball and slipped a potion into the wine, which made them pass out and their powers weaker. She ended up taking a huge portion of their magic. So that's why the High Lords aren't as powerful as they typically are. Tamlin's father was close with Highburn and sided with him during the war. Ew. This is how Tamlin met Amarantha, and she took a liking for him. More like she was literally obsessed with him in an unhealthy way. She took out Lucien's eye for him telling her to go back to wherever place in hell she crawled from. Which, I support you, Lucien. Thank you for doing that. I love Lucien. But this
Lucien's
bitch,
sassy as fuck.
Yeah, this bitch likes to collect body parts.
This is such a good point. She fucking does.
I'm like, I'm sorry. You stole Lucien's eye. You stole also Jurian's eye and his finger. And you wear it.
Yeah, she's a little nuts. She's a little crazy.
You need to be in jail. Okay. So.
Or worse.
So she threw a masquerade for Lucien to apologize to him. She was like, I'm sorry I took your eyeball, but here's a ball for you because I feel so bad. And she made Tamlin bring everyone from the Spring Court. Everyone. She said peace could be had if Tamlin was her lover. Tamlin.
Take one for the team, dude. Take one for the motherfucking team.
Tamlin said he'd rather take a human to his bed than to be her lover. She placed the curse on him and said, to break it, you must find a human girl who hates our kind, who is willing to kill our kind, and have her fall in love with you. It also had to be a fairy from his court that she killed, and this deal would expire in 49 years. After those 49 years, he would be hers. And
it's
then,
all making sense now.
It's making sense. Alice also decides to tell Feyre, by the way, that treaty doesn't exist. It exists, but the part of you have to go to the fairy lands if you kill a fairy is a lie. That literally this girl for half the fucking book is trying to find a way to break this treaty and it didn't even fucking exist.
If only she could read, bro. If only she could read.
Oh my god. All Feyre had to do was to tell Tamlin that she loved him and the curse would be broken. And Tamlin would have gotten his powers back. But Tamlin sent her home 3 days before the curse was to expire.
I'm sorry. You should have listened to Lucien. If you had just listened to Lucien, she literally would have fucking said it. I don't like, he created his own turmoil here.
It's the way that she almost said it too when she was leaving. And I'm just like, I mean, I'm glad, like part of me is glad she didn't because we wouldn't have gotten this like part of the book. But
of course,
was just like.
This is the best part. This is the best part. But it's like, really, Tamlin? Like really, if you would just listen to Lucien and just let her stay and not try to send her away, she would have said it back. Anyways.
Yes. So Feyre then asked Alice to take her under the mountain. Oh. All right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Here we go, y'all. We're going under the fucking mountain.
It's dark down here.
So chapter 33. Feyre enters under the mountain, but before she does, Alice gives her some more advice. She is our advice queen. She says, number one, do not drink the wine. She does. Number two.
Does Feyre listen?
Don't make deals with anyone unless your life depends on it. She also makes two deals. Number three, don't trust a soul in there, even Tamlin. Your senses will try to betray you. She also trusts people in here.
Girl, were you listening?
There's one part of the curse that Alice cannot talk about, but she leaves Feyre with one more word of advice. listen to what you hear. Feyre starts to enter under the mountain through caves, and she spots a small opening, so she fits herself through it, and then she is captured by the adder. She had no plan. Literally, Alice was like, you have a plan? She was like, nope.
That part was hilarious. She literally had no plan.
Literally said, I don't have a plan.
She was like, I'm just going to walk in here. Whatever happens, happens. I'm here for my man.
I'm walking into the scariest place alive with the most powerful fairies, and I don't have a plan. I don't really have weapons on me either. I have like a few arrows. That's it. That's it.
Literally. Literally, they're like, we're taking your weapon. Oh my god.
All right, y'all. Chapter 34, the adder takes Feyre to the throne room, and it has red floors. The beams are literally taller than Tamlin's manor. This place is grand. Then she sees her, Amarantha. Feyre says Amarantha was lovely, but not as beautiful as she imagined, and painting her would drive her into madness.
Basic ass bitch.
And you know who's sitting next to Amarantha? Tamlin. And he has no reaction.
Another basic ass bitch. No, I'm just
kidding. Hey, maybe they're perfect together. We'll talk about it in our theories portion. Tamlin has no reaction to seeing Feyre. Feyre tells Amarantha that she is here to claim the man that she loves.
A day late and a dollar short, baby.
Amarantha laughs at Feyre. She is very regal with how she speaks. She mentions how she tortured another human girl, thinking it was Feyre. And then Feyre looks up and sees, she sees Claire's body is like just on the walls. Baby. She's tortured. She's dead. Like,
what they did to that girl was...
I know, I feel really bad for her. Like, what the actual fuck, dude? Okay.
Yeah, that was bad.
It was bad.
That was bad.
Mm-hmm. Not a good moment. So Tamlin says he has never seen Feyre before. Amarantha says she will make a bargain with Feyre. Literally what Alice said, do not do this. The bargain is that Feyre has to do 3 trials every full moon of Amarantha's choosing. If Feyre completes these, she can have Tamlin, and the Spring Court's curse will be broken, and they can all leave under the mountain. Amarantha also says she will add to this, and if Feyre can answer a riddle at any time, the curse will be broken. If Feyre does not complete the task, she will be killed. She will be gone. And Feyre says, okay, I will do this.
I bet I got it. I got it. I can read.
Yeah. Which is funny because that comes in later. Okay. After she accepts, the adder punches her multiple times and takes her away.
Yeah. We're already not off to a great start here.
All right. Last chapter of this episode, and then we're going to discuss a lot. Chapter 35. Feyre finds herself in a fucking dungeon. Her nose is broken, and she hears screaming coming from other cells. This is a great place to be.
Jesus.
Someone slips into her cell, and it's Lucien. Lucien is like, what the fuck are you doing here? Which, this happens a lot with them. He ran into a calamine, and now she's just under the mountain. And he's the one to fight her all the time. And she explains to him how Alice told her everything and brought her to one of the cave openings of Under the Mountain. He helps her a little bit. He sets her broken nose and heals her just enough where it doesn't look suspicious. Anyway, he ends up having to leave because there's guards, there's new guards coming in. The ones that are on patrol right now are drunk, and he's like, I gotta go, sorry. So, I mean, at least he tried to help, unlike someone else. Side eye. Amarantha summons all the High Lords during this, by the way, until Feyre's trials are over. A few days later, Feyre is taken back to the throne room. There is a huge crowd of fairies, and Amarantha asks for Feyre's name. This is like a multiple page thing where she's trying to find out this bitch's name, and no one will tell her. Like...
Rumpelstiltskin. Like,
just fucking tell her your name. Fuck. Okay. She doesn't give it. So she calls for Rysan to confirm that she's the one he saw at the Supreme Court. This is where I was like, okay, Rysan, I see you. He says that all humans look the same to him. So he doesn't confirm it. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're so like, wait a second. What's this guy's deal?
Yeah, what was happening? Amrita orders one of the Adder to grab Lucien so that she can learn Feyre's name since nobody will fucking tell her. She orders Rysan to take control of Lucien's mind. And then, of course, like, four redheaded men come out of nowhere, and it happens to be his awful fucking brothers who we hate. God, and they're all them. Like, oh, if we knew Feyre's name, like, we would tell you. Ooh, like, I can't.
Brown nosers.
So once Rysan starts to get into Lucien's mind, Pharaoh's like, oh my god. So she's like, it's fine. My name's Feyre. And then Amarantha finally gives Feyre the riddle. All right, here we go. I'm going to read it. There are those who seek me in a lifetime, but we never meet. And those I kiss, but who trample me beneath ungrateful feet. At times, I seem to favor the clever and the fair, but I bless all those who are brave enough to dare. By large, my ministrations are soft-handed and sweet, but scorned, I become a difficult beast to defeat. For though each of my strikes land a powerful blow, when I kill, I do it slow. Feyre doesn't know the answer.
Of course she doesn't. She can't read. Poor baby.
But like, she read it out loud.
How is she supposed to remember that three-paragraph riddle in her head? I don't even understand how she, like, gets through it to the end. I'm like, so you just said this riddle to her one time and she just memorized it.
I will say, if she got the riddle wrong, it was over. So it probably is best to think about it. But I feel like the answer is so obvious that it's too easy in a way that it's like, is this like right? Because it's obviously like we know the answer. It's fucking love.
To be fair, though, she hasn't lived a life with a lot of love. It's not like something she may be quick to understand. She couldn't even admit to herself that she loved Tamlin before like she left him. So all I can think of is like, I mean, obviously, it's obvious what the answer is, but she, like, maybe, like, to her, it's not obvious because this isn't something she's experienced a lot. You know what I mean? She doesn't even feel loved by her own family before she goes to Tamlin's. She does end up falling in love with him and, you know, but she can't even admit it to herself. So I don't know. I'm going to try to be soft on my girl Feyre. Plus, also, everybody in the room, remember, she's 19, okay? She's 19 freaking years old.
That's true. So after she gets the riddle, finally, she goes back to her cell. And a few days later, the guards come to get her because it is the first full moon. All right? That's what happened in those chapters.
Yes. Yay.
Yeah, that's a fun portion. That's a fun portion of this book. I love the trial. It
is. The next portion is, I can't wait.
Yeah, the next portion is definitely the best part of this of the book by far. It's so good.
Can't wait.
I really actually enjoyed the first book. I know a lot of people don't like it as much. It was hard for them to get through, but like honestly, this is really good.
Yeah, no, the first time I read this book, I 100%, I didn't have anybody tell me to read this book. I didn't have any, I just was reading it. And I read the whole thing. And I read it in like 2 days. And then I started the next book. So clearly I liked it enough to be like, I need to keep reading this without even knowing that Shadow Daddy number one was going to be coming into the story, really. But it's so hard for me to read this and like remember what my thoughts were before I loved Rysan. But I've tried to remember if I did not like him at the, like in this book, or if I like, I think there was parts where I didn't like him. And then like by the end, I was like, okay, no, he was doing this for a reason. Like there's more to him. But yeah. And I like a morally gray character. I do. You know, we're reading a book right now that I'm like, oh yeah, Morally Gray. What can I say? Gray is my favorite color.
I'm gonna get that tattooed on my butt. Okay,
literally. So right under RD,
Rune Zanon,
CP, TOVF.
Oh my gosh, I actually might get that tattooed on me somewhere, but we'll see.
Oh my god.
Okay. So a little bit about our characters in this book. So we get a reappearance from Elaine and Nesta. Elaine is, like I said, she's in her, like, soft girl gardening era. She is so happy. She's living her best life. She is thriving with her friendships. Yeah.
This part did make me laugh because there's a point where, like, Feyre's talking about, like, her gardens and how she's thinking about making another garden, and she might even start a vegetable garden. And I'm like, where was the vegetable garden last year when y'all were fucking starving? Like, what? Like, the fact that it was mentioned in the book is just hilarious to me. She's like, oh yeah, and maybe I'll make a vegetable garden now that we're rich and we have more money and food than we know what to do with.
Yeah.
Hopefully she at least donates the vegetables to the poor like Feyre did. The money. I don't hate her. I don't love her. She's just kind of there. She just kind of like, la-di-da, she's so sweet. It's so funny to me that she's so easily glamored. She's just like, oh my gosh, I didn't even recognize you, Feyre. Can you believe? Found dead ships in the bay. Can you believe it? We're rich again. Like, she's just like,
and Nesta's okay. Just like in the back, like her arms are folded, and she's just like,
what the fuck
is happening? She's like, I've been trying to like not say anything, and now she's like, I don't understand what's happening.
Dude, Elaine saying that she couldn't even bring her friends to the house because Nesta just stares at them in the creep. I was like, oh my god, these two are freaking hilarious.
I know, they're like so opposite of each other at this point. Oh, okay, man. So really quick on Nesta. So Feyre's like pretty touched that Nesta actually did go try to find her. Because obviously Nesta wasn't glamored by Tamlin, so she was like, what the fuck is happening? So she went out, she hired the mercenary, and obviously she wasn't able to get over the wall, so she had to come back. But yeah, Feyre just mentions that she appreciates that of Nesta, and that she cared beneath it, and yeah, I think that's like kind of the moment where I was like, this bitch is going to have such a good story. I don't know what it is, but I'm like, this bitch is going to have the greatest story for me.
This is showing that there's layers to Nesta, that she definitely isn't, you know, like she's not one single layer. She's multifaceted. She's still pretty rude. She gets a lot worse before she gets better. Like I said, this is the first demonstration that Nesta isn't just this cold, cruel, bitchy ass person that we got to meet in the first couple chapters of this book, that she does care. She did go looking for Feyre. You know, she did try. She admits that she's more angry with her father than anybody because she feels like he never tried to do anything. She admits that she was jealous of Feyre because Feyre was able to take care of them when she couldn't. And a lot of that is adding to her, you know, cruelty and how she behaved. It was kind of like a shield for her. So obviously, do I think that that makes it okay? No, but we do get a little bit more insight into Nesta and her thought processes and why she acts the way she acts. And we see that she is more of a complex character than just, you know, this evil nag who just, you know, is rude to everybody.
And on to some of our main characters. So Feyre during this is so love stricken. She is like, I love this man who plays the fiddle for me. I love him. It's like the hottest thing ever.
Yep.
She is very brave during this. I mean, this whole fucking series, she's very brave. But she literally was brave. Yeah. Like, this bitch had no plan. And she was like, I'm going to go in here and save him. And with that being said, it is a little bit foolish too, but
it's okay. Literally foolish. She's so, on one hand, she's so brave. She's like, I'm going to go back. Oh, my man's in danger. I'm going to go save him. But she's foolish because it's like, you had no plan. You had no, like, you couldn't sneak in, couldn't like, did it like, no poison, no, just something. I know that none of the stuff that they thought worked work. So iron and stuff wasn't going to work, but like, you know, some ash arrows, you're rich now. Like, so I don't know, like something.
That is so
something,
true.
Girl.
Like she's loaded. Like
you're they loaded, have loaded.
So much money. Tamlin also sent her back with trunks of fucking jewels and shit. Like they're so well off now.
Money, yeah, than her father's ships, the investments, mm-hmm. her fortune from her dead aunt. They're good. You could find some ash arrows. You could, like, I don't know. nobody's at the Spring Court. Travel further into Prithian. See if anybody can help you. She was like guns blazing. She's like, my man, my man, my man. I'm going in here. I'm gonna save the day. Oh, wait, I got captured and now I'm beat the fuck up in the dungeon and I can't solve this riddle because I have no education. And I guess we'll see what happens.
I just thought of something. It's the way that Feyre literally does all of this for Tamlin. She puts herself in direct danger, and yet under the mountain, Tamlin doesn't do shit for her. And when he has the chance to, like, he still doesn't. Like, I'm just...
Yeah, I didn't just think of that. What? That has been, like, when we finally get to this next portion of chapters... I'm sorry, if you guys like Tamlin, you might want to check out because I will say the truth about my boy Reese. Okay, he does some things that I don't agree with, but the way that Tamlin acts under this mountain, not to mention the fact that, okay, we could talk about it in this episode because we've already talked about the fact that like Amarantha was literally obsessed with him. Do we want to talk about the fact that you could have prevented all of this 50 years ago? You literally, like when I was saying take one for the team, like you literally, all you had to do was agree to her terms to be with her. And if you hated her so much, wait till the bitch is sleeping and fucking kill her. I don't understand like what this whole, you could have ended this so many times. Even at this point, if he had just agreed to be with her, she would have left everybody else alone. Like what's wrong with you? You literally hold the power in your hand to fix this whole situation, and you're so stubborn and so proud, you would rather kidnap, lie to, trick a 19-year-old girl into fucking falling in love with you than to just be like, you know what? I got this grown-ass woman here who's an evil bitch. I'm just gonna pretend to like her, and then I'm gonna snake her when the opportunity's right.
Yeah, even to mention that he had to send his own men over the wall for this, too. Multiple
sacrifice
killed. But anyway,
best friends. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
And also, like, I will say, since we're speaking about Tamlin, there's a moment in these chapters where Feyre is like, how did Tamlin let Amarantha kill Claire knowing that wasn't me?
Well, I mean,
but so did Rhysand.
I'm to the point here where it's like, I kind of know, like, well, okay. In the last episode, when we were talking about making decisions for the tough things, like, first of all, we already know that Rhysand is morally gray and he's going to make decisions for the people that he cares about or that even benefit him and him, like his own thing, like more than anything. He is a caring person, but he is always going to choose to protect and take care of himself and his court first. He probably actually understands that Feyre is the best chance that they have at defeating this if she, you know, is in love with Tamlin or whatever. But also Tamlin, he has no attachment to this girl. He doesn't want her to go get Feyre and put her in the same situation. So of course he's not going to be like, that's not Feyre. I wouldn't expect him to be fair. Like if it was me and I loved somebody and I sent them away to be safe, and they dragged this person that I don't know, have no attachment to, in front of me, and they say, is this the person that you love? Or they torture them and thinking that it's the person that I love. Am I going to speak up and be like, oh, by the way, that's not him. He's still out there. Go get him. Like, probably not. Probably not. So
yeah, that's a good point. Making a morally gray really quick. So Lauren's been talking about for multiple episodes how Feyre is just literally morally gray. She's not like morally good. She's morally gray because 100%. There's another supporting reason that I found in these chapters of why that is. But she gave Rhysand Claire's name to protect her and her family. And Claire was obviously tortured and died because of it. And in that moment, Feyre had to put herself and her family before Claire. And that, again, is just such a morally gray moment for her that I was just like, yeah. Like, she did have to, obviously she didn't know that that was going to happen, but she didn't want to give her name or anyone in her, or like her family name away, because she knew that there was a chance that they would go find them, and they did. Like, they literally killed Claire's entire fucking family.
God.
She feels bad about it and stuff, but she was like, I would never like put myself or my family or those I love in danger. And that's literally the exact same thing that Raisan does.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's so clear to me from the jump that Feyre is more of a morally gray character than she is morally good. I feel like a lot of people try to portray her as this morally good person. And I do think she is a good person, but in the same way that I think Rhys is, he definitely is willing to make tough decisions that, you know, put his self and the people that he loves over the well-being of, you know, certain other people. And that's what makes them morally gray. It also is what makes them perfect for each other. She's able to understand a lot of the things that he's done and a lot of the, you know, messed up things that he does because she is able to have this perspective of when it was her and when it's the people that she loves, she will also make these tough decisions. Like I said about her being foolish, she is literally like, that was just foolish. Even Rhysan later is like, I thought you would have had the, you know, the wherewithal to make up a name, not name somebody else who was a real person. But, you know, other than that, like you said, I don't think she knew, you know, what was going to happen. But at the same time, she does acknowledge that she knew that something bad could happen because otherwise she would have felt comfortable giving her name and her family's name. So just another example of, you know, why they're perfect for each other.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Raisan, during these chapters, for me, it definitely, well, when I first was reading it, even though I knew a little bit about him, but it seems like he's more of a villain at first. And then up until chapter 35, it's like the book kind of makes you think, oh, this guy, like, he fucking sucks. Like, what's happening? Why is he being such an asshole? And then it's a second that he's like, oh, I don't recognize Feyre, when Amaritha asked him to confirm if this is the girl he's seen at the Spring Court. That's kind of where you're like, oh, there's something. Like, there's something going on with him. He's up to something. And obviously he is. We get huge explanation of
reveals.
It. Later.
Yeah,
on.
I love Rhys. It's so hard for me to read this book through the lens now that I like of like loving him, but it is so interesting because she does like it, Sarah does such a good job of when we're first introduced to him, he saves her from a messed up situation and he, you know, lets her make her own decisions. He doesn't try to, you know, manipulate her or do anything with her. He just like, you know, reaches out to her. He's like, this is, you know, the girl I've been looking for, literally. And it's a good interaction. And then the next time we meet him, he's literally like being a fucking dick, reading her mind, like, you know, taunting Lucien and Tamlin, saying super messed up things. So even though they were taunting him back, it's a back and forth, but it's just like these characters are so complex and that's why I love them. I don't know that if I'm being 100% honest, like if any single like Sarah J. Maas character, especially in ACOTAR, I'm really trying to think if like anybody is 100% good. They're all super complicated, super like complex, you know, characters. And that's what I love about her writing and the world that she creates and the people that she makes you grow attached to. Because like I said, all of them have great qualities and not great qualities. And it's just, I don't know, that's so real. And I love that for her. Well, okay, let me say, not all of them have not so great qualities and great qualities. Some of them just have not so great qualities, but for the most part, the people that are good and like we love and they do have great qualities, they're complex people. They're not perfect. Like even Elaine isn't perfect. And like, she's probably the closest thing I could get in my mind just off the bat to somebody who's just, you know, a good, sweet, good, morally good character. But even Elaine, you know, as we learn throughout these books, does, you know, things and makes hard decisions. And I mean, even from the first chapters of this book, when she's, you know, not treating Feyre well, and she's also, you know, not standing up for Feyre, or when, you know, Nesta is being really mean, or she's even choosing Nesta's side over Feyre. So I just really, I love that. And I appreciate that about SJM's writing, because it's what brings me in and what makes me want to learn as much as I can about these characters. And one second I like somebody and the next second I can't stand them. And then I like somebody else. And then I'm like, wait a second, what are they doing? And then, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I love that. Love it.
Yeah, me too. I fucking love extremely complex characters. My favorite characters ever are always very complex. But also no one in real life is going to be 100% morally good anyway. So it's just kind of a reflection of like real life and how you can see yourself and characters and stuff. Because it's like, even if you try to be the greatest person alive, you're still going to probably make mistakes. Not probably, you are. You're not going to be able to make every single person feel amazing. Like, you're probably going to hurt someone's feelings at some point. It's impossible to be 100% morally good. And I just love that these characters, like, I could put myself in these characters' shoes and go, okay, if I was in their shoes, I was living in a fantasy world, what the fuck would I do? I love these characters.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
except for the creepy villains. They can fuck off. But other than that,
yeah, like I said, not all of the people with not so great qualities have great qualities to cancel them out. Right. Like Amarantha, she's trash. There's a few more in the later series we'll get into, but yeah, and right now in this part of the book, Amarantha, no redeeming qualities. She fucking sucks.
Zero.
she's just fucking awful. But
yes. And then really quick to wrap up our characters, we have to talk about our baby Lucien.
Oh, who we love him. I love him.
He's so sweet. I'm just like, Tamlin, why weren't you the one to come help Feyre? Why was it literally Lucien? Was it? I mean, maybe in Tamlin's defense, he couldn't get away from Amarantha because she's really obsessed with him. But I'm just like,
it is true.
Did you send Lucien, or did Lucien come on his own accord? Which I'm pretty sure Lucien just came on his own accord. But Lucien is, I love Lucien. I love that he told Amarantha to go back to fucking hell. I hate that he got his eye taken out. But low key, like the eye, the like metal eye look, kind of is. I was fire. Like, this guy, yeah, like, I'm
it's a slay. It's a slay. The badass scar and, like, the metal. Yeah, it's a slay. It's kind of a slay.
Yeah, no, we love him. Nothing
I love Lucien
to say about him right now.
Yeah, I love Lucien. I love, in this portion of chapters, the way that we're starting to see his and Feyre's relationship really evolve. I love their friendship throughout these books. I will say that, you know, there is a point where I think that they aren't as close anymore, but I don't know. Just Lucien's always been my guy from the Spring Court. If I was going to be rooting for anybody, it's going to be Lucien. I love their banter. I've said it for real. No. Like, I love their banter. I've said it before in the last couple episodes, but like the way that they just joke with each other throughout these parts, like the way he's teasing her about when she first like kisses Tamlin, he's like, if I offer you the moon on a string, will you give me a kiss too? He's just so like sassy and witty and like messing with her. He is technically aware of what's going on, so that means he's also lying to her and helping trick her, which is, like I said, not everybody's got all the great qualities, but overall I do love Lucien. I love his personality, and he really shows up for her here in these last couple parts of this book. So
yeah, he's great.
The only thing that I think is so funny about Amarantha that we didn't touch on is like when Feyre is literally like walking through this world, she's like, God, beautiful, gorgeous, stunning, amazing, spectacular. Never have my eyes seen anything this gorgeous. And then she meets Amarantha and she's like, she's kind of basic. She's not ugly, but she definitely ain't hot. And I just think that that's so funny. I'm like, is that why this bitch is so upset? Is that why she's so mad? Because Tamlin, well, and that's also showing how shallow Tamlin is, but Tamlin doesn't even want to date her. Tamlin would rather be with a human girl than her. He said it. He said those exact words.
He did. He literally said that.
Not those exact words, like, girl, you so unfortunate looking that I don't even want to be with you. I'd rather be with a plain Jane human girl. And I just think that that's so funny. But yeah.
No, yeah, like in my Amarantha, head.
Not it.
In my head, like, I imagine Amarantha to be, like, so beautiful. But now I'm like, oh, I guess she's not supposed to be.
Oh, that's funny. I don't. But I guess it's because, like, I always remember that. I always remember Feyre being like, I mean, she was not ugly, but she's not attractive. And it's just so funny to me because Feyre, like, literally, anytime she meets a new fairy, she's, like, gorgeous, stunning, the most beautiful man I've ever seen. Then she meets Amarantha and she's like, she's kind of plain.
She's okay. She's like a 5, maybe.
I don't know what she is, but I just know she ain't no fairy level hot. Or fae level hot.
That's so true, because literally, like, few books later when, like, Elaine and Nesta become high, like, fae, like, like, Feyre literally says, like, they look devastatingly beautiful. And I'm just like, ooh. So you're supposed to be, like, extremely beautiful when you're Fae. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And she is Fae. Like, she's not human. So I don't know. Maybe that's why she's so upset. Like, in a world of Fae, she's not. I don't know. But, yeah, literally. I mean, I'm talking about everybody Feyre meets. All the High Lords. All their girlfriends. The whole inner circle. Like, everybody that Feyre meets, all she could do is talk about how attractive they are. Except for Amarantha. And I just have always thought that that's so funny.
It's the way that, like, Amarantha literally just, like, cannot let Tamlin go. And I'm just like, why are you so obsessed with him? But I will touch on that a bit because I have a theory I want to bring up. But anyway.
All right, guys. So that was our character discussions. Now we're going to go ahead and get into some foreshadowing. Throughout this section of the book, we definitely get, like, a little bit of foreshadowing, mostly for events that happen in this book, but a little bit of things that'll be coming into play in the future. We definitely find out early on that the Night Court is, like, deadly. They're considered, you know, like, they're feared by the rest of the courts. They are the big bads. We know that they are considered the strongest, and we eventually find out that Rhysand is literally the most powerful High Lord in history. Also, at this point, it's kind of not shocking that everybody's afraid of the Night Court. I mean, they do shit like send heads on spikes as gifts. And this dude, the leader, is literally a Daemati who can, like, break into your mind and control you. Pretty powerful shit. So yeah, it kind of makes sense. And that is referenced in chapter 26 when Rhysand literally, like, even though he's weakened at this point and he's not at his full power, he's still strong enough to use his powers to, like, literally control Feyre, read her mind. And he's, like, strong enough to, like, make Tamlin and everybody else, Lucien, everybody's afraid of him. He makes them, like, bow before him. So, and he's not even at his full strength. Also in chapter 5, again, Feyre points out that if this is what Rhysand's power is, like, right now, like, she can't even imagine what it was like before Amarantha stole it. She says it must have been extraordinary. And then in some other foreshadowing that happens early on, this quote happens in chapter 24, and Feyre is talking to Tamlin, and she literally says to him, "You never made me feel like a prisoner, never made me feel like chattel." And I just think that this is so funny because this is definitely foreshadowing for him literally turning her into a prisoner in the next book. Like, we get it. I get it. He's stressed about what happened under the mountain, even though he did nothing to help her the entire time. He's worried about her. He wants to keep her safe. But I also have questions about his reasoning there that I'll probably get more into as we get to that part of the book. I don't know how worried he really was about talk or about something happening to her, or if he was just more like coveting her and wanting to keep her to himself. Yeah, anyway, so I know that he's, like, worried about her, but he literally turns her into a prisoner, and we know that that is, like, the breaking point for her when it comes to Akamath. So definitely foreshadowing there for her being like, "You never made me feel like a prisoner." Just wait, girl.
Yeah, it's also the way and our last episode, we touched on how he literally says to her, like, "Oh, I just want you home safe and painting." And that's, like, what he, like, tries to force her to do in Akamath. And I just can't. You put, like, a little ward on the fucking door so she can't leave. And you're like, "Here's all this painting supplies." Like, you're fine. Like, you're fine. You wake up all the time at night screaming, but it's fine. Just, it's cool.
Yeah, when we get in the next book, it's just like that whole, like, I don't want to get too far into it because I do want to talk about it when we get there, but it definitely, I have a lot to say about his motives at that point of the book and what he does. I do feel like there has been a lot of, like, foreshadowing and allusions to that coming up based on this book. We pointed it out in the last episode. This is another example of it. I forget what Tamlin was saying to her before that, but he, like, literally says something like, you know, like, I don't know, he took her or something like that. She was like, "You never made me feel like a prisoner." I'm like, girl, hold just your tongue. Because it's coming. It is coming. But yes. And then also we have some foreshadowing when it comes to Lucien telling Feyre not to drink the fairy wine, and we get to see the side effects of that early on. She gets giddy as fuck. Like I said, she's basically tripping balls. It's like the girl did some sort of, you know, magical drug, and she's just out here dancing her little heart out and thinking everybody's so beautiful. I wonder what she would think it looks like if she could remember what it's like when she drinks the fairy wine.
Low-key, I kind of want to try this fairy wine. It sounds like fun. At least this version, not the version in Under the Mountain, because I think that one might be slightly different because she like really doesn't remember anything.
Well, I do think that – I don't know if that's the fairy wine or if that's Rhysand messing with her memories. But, yeah.
Wow, I never thought of that. That makes me upset. Oh, my God. I never thought of that. Well, because Alice literally says – like, don't drink the fairy wine under the mountain. It's different than the one in the spring.
Okay, so maybe it is.
Double check that, but I'm pretty sure that was.
Right, maybe it is different, but I always took it as, it, like, he gave her the fairy wine to make her uninhibited, and then he was kind of, like, you know, not erasing her memories, but basically erasing her memories so she wouldn't have any recollection of, like, what she was doing.
So on page 291... when Alice is, like, giving her advice to Feyre, she says, don't drink the wine. It's not like what we had at solstice. It will do more harm than good. So I guess it is a little different.
Right. Okay. So that could definitely be. Yeah. I'm just, like I said, I really don't remember. I 100%. I need to relook into it. But I don't know why I thought that Rhys was kind of affecting her memories. In his mind, he's doing it to protect her because he doesn't want her to remember the horrors of what was going on. But in my mind, I'm just always like, that's bad.
I don't know. I can't remember either because him as a character, he's pretty consensual about going into someone's mind. If it's
that is true.
When he's on the same side with which he is on Feyre's side, so I don't know. I guess we'll find that out once we get to like that whole section of A Court of Mist and Fury. But
yeah, because I can't remember if he talks about it in there or not. If he talks about it, it's definitely during that like 54 or whatever. So obviously we've gotten the warning from Lucien not to drink the fairy wine early on. We get the warning again from Alice, don't drink the fairy wine. And Feyre can't stop drinking the fucking fairy wine. So anyway. And then also I just thought it was really interesting. There is a part in chapter 25 where Tamlin takes her away and she is drunk on the fairy wine and he takes her away. He's like, I want to show you something. And he takes her to this little meadow glen or whatever in the part of the woods, and he shows her this, you know, super cute light show basically of like these things called will-o'-the-wisp, and they're little spirits that like free themselves, and she keeps comparing them to moonlight and different nighttime things, and it just made me think of Starfall. And is this another nod to some night court type behavior on Spring Court land? I did look into it a little bit. Everything that I found was basically saying it's a specific to the Spring Court type thing. So maybe not, but it was just really interesting to me that it's once again, like Tamlin is wooing her by using these nightish things, you know, and yeah, it's just interesting. It's so funny to me that the whole celebration of the summer solstice, like when she really falls in love with Tamlin, is the complete opposite of the winter solstice, where it's the longest day of the year. It's like her, the whole thing is the, she's born on the longest night of the year, and you know, she's meant and destined to be with the night court. And it's just really interesting how Sarah put these little things in here.
I want to be meant and destined for the night court.
No, like if I, can I just get to Prithian? Can I just get to Prithian? Please. Like, honestly, I'll take any court minus spring and autumn.
I would take any court minus autumn if Tamlin wasn't at the spring court. Because then I could just be like, Elaine, oh my God, hey girly. Like, and then.
Yeah. Well, if Tamlin wasn't there, then that would be fine. But if Baron wasn't at the autumn court, I would be fine with the autumn court too. Autumn's my favorite season. So. Right. But it's the people that rule there. I don't want anything to do with at all. But any other court, take me there.
Period.
And then finally, we get a little bit of foreshadowing when Rhysand comes, you know, and interrupts their breakfast. We find out at this part that she, Amarantha, is preparing for Tamlin to come under the mountain. And she's made him an offer that at that point, we still didn't know what it was. And that she thinks that he's broken. So she doesn't know that Feyre has been here this whole time. She doesn't know that he's this close to getting the girl to fall in love with him before he botches it in a stupid act of whatever. Should have listened to Lucien. But anyways, so yeah, that was foreshadowing for something we've already gotten a resolution to. But definitely, you know, when you're at that point and you're reading it, it's like that's the first little signs of us finding out what's really going on with this situation.
And then for some other foreshadowing that comes on way later in the book or in the series, well, we learned that Nessa didn't marry Thomas, and Elaine tells Feyre that Nessa actually quit her socialite season and she's barely talking to anyone. And we learn why that is. Really sad and heavy stuff that we learn in Silver Flames. So Thomas tried to do things to her. And that's why she just didn't want to be social and she's not really talking to anyone. Also, with Elaine, I just wanted to point this out because I kind of love this theory. And this is a theory just for ACOTAR. But the way that Feyre mentions so many times how Elaine is just glowing and she's so beautiful when she's gardening, she just has this vibe to her that she's like the happiest she's ever been when she's gardening. And I'm just like, oh, just so many small nods to her and the spring court that I'm just like, is that going to happen at some point? Because it's like, we know that her dresser was covered in flowers. You know that she's a gardening queen. She loves it. And Feyre literally says when she first gets to the spring court, this place is made for someone like Elaine. I'm just like, I would kind of love it. We need someone to come in and fix the spring court. And hopefully, I mean, I don't know who it's going to be with, but we'll see.
I've said it before. I think I said it in the first episode of this. I really, really think it's possible. It makes so much sense to me. And I don't even like talking about this because the freaking Lucien Asriel beef is real in this fandom. It makes so much sense to me if something happens to Tamlin, or, you know, I'm not saying I want anything bad to happen to him. I'm just saying he's for some reason, he's unable to run the spring court. Lucien is already his right-hand man. It just makes sense if Lucien somehow takes over and Elaine, being his mate, ends up becoming lady, high lady, probably, because Lucien is like, she's not going to accept less than what her sister got. She knows what's out there now. Of the spring court, it just makes so much sense. It fulfills the destiny. I don't necessarily see Lucien as a spring court, you know, guy, but I do see him as a high lord. I could see that for him. And being as how, you know, we do know that Helion is his real, you know, father. He, like, the Fae live for a very long time. He's already given up the fact that he's not going to be heir to the Autumn Court in any way, shape, or form. I don't know about the Day Court because Helion doesn't technically have an heir. So if that secret ever does get revealed, I could see that, you know, being possible. But it just makes sense to me that as an option, you know, that they could end up ruling the Spring Court together. It just kind of works. And I'll tell you this right now, Asriel's not about to leave the Night Court. I see that as a big issue with Nesta and Cassian too. I think I've talked about that a little bit as well. I think it's highly possible that all three sisters are kind of meant to be in power in these, you know, in different courts. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, if Cassian is willing to go with Nesta to a different court. If that ends up happening, I don't see Asriel leaving, but it's possible. It's a fun theory.
Yeah, I love that theory. I have so many theories about the Spring Court, and I don't know which one to believe, but they're all really fun.
So, and finally, in chapter 34, we do find out a very important tidbit of information, being that magic deals have to be extremely specific. We do know that amongst the Fae, they already are super like word oriented, and everything that they say matters, and you really have to pay attention to what they're saying because they like to use words to kind of make things, you know, tricky. And so, yes, when it comes to bargains in this world, your wording is so important, because if you misspeak or you don't cover yourself in some way, it leaves it open to chaos.
Bargains and deals are so big with the Fae. So that kind of just shows that that's going to be a big part of literally every single book. Like,
well, we already know that she makes... She's made one bargain. She's going to make another bargain. Alice told her not to make any bargains. When you're making a bargain, if you ever find yourself in the land of the Fae and you are, you know, making deals with people, just make sure that you cover all your bases, because words matter.
So now we're getting into our theories portion. And there is one theory that we're going to talk about before we give our big spoiler warning for other Sarah J. Maas books. So if you've only read ACOTAR, you're still okay right now. So the one thing I wanted to bring up, and I've seen this online so many places, constantly being brought up. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm kind of on the fence. But a lot of people think that Amarantha and Tamlin could have possibly been mates. The reason why a lot of people in the fandom think this is because Amarantha had this obsession with Tamlin, so obsessed with him that she put a curse on him. He was like, I don't want you. And maybe it's because he decided to reject the mating bond, and that's why she's such a bitch, and maybe that's why he's such a bitch too. Some of the theories were saying maybe that's why he ended up not really helping Feyre under the mountain, is because he just physically couldn't, maybe because of the bond, even though like he probably would have rejected it. Like, he hated her. It makes sense because a lot of people would have put Tamlin in like the villain section, and it makes sense if he was with another villain. But at the same time, the one thing that has me kind of tripping on that is mates are supposed to be equal, and Amarantha isn't an equal to any of the High Lords. Like, she's not as powerful as them. That's why she had to take some of their magic. I don't know how I feel, but I like the theory. It's fun to think about. It's really fun to think about. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah. That is, it's not the first time I've seen that theory. I definitely have seen the Amarantha Tamlin mate theory before. Like you said, there's so many things that like point to it. I almost have like a different theory that Amarantha is not actually a Fae, so I don't know if she could be mated with Tamlin, if that makes sense. This literally is crack theory as fuck. I'm always on some crack theory shit, but it does kind of make sense to me if Amarantha isn't actually Fae. That's why she's not as regarded as beautiful as the rest of the Fae. That's why she's not as powerful as the rest of the Fae. And also, she's probably obsessed with him from like an actual, like, I just really, really fucking like this person and obsessed with them and I can't have them, so I'm gonna do some crazy bitch shit. Versus like Tamlin, who like, I don't see how he couldn't, like, why he wouldn't tell anybody that she was his mate, because it does go both ways. Even when you reject the bond, the other person still knows that they are mated to you. So it would especially like Tamlin being somebody who grew up in this world, who knows what a mating bond is, like, it makes sense that Feyre wasn't able to tell the mating bond because she doesn't even know what that fucking is, really. Like, she is not from this world. But Tamlin was raised in that. He saw, you know, his parents. He's seen people be mated before. In my mind, there's no way that he wouldn't know that he was mated to her if that was the case. And so it's almost like, I personally don't think that that is the case here. I think that Amarantha was obsessed with him in a weird way that made her kind of crazy, but I don't quite know if it's like a rejected mating bond, because as of right now, the only kind of even close example that we have to that is Elaine with Lucien, and she still knows that they're mates. She just doesn't really want to accept it. She hasn't fully rejected the bond, but she just doesn't want to accept it. But I just, why would he keep it a secret if it was? And I feel like he has to know that it is, if it is, you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't not know.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of why he would keep it a secret is maybe because, like, he was just like, wow, this is the bitch I'm supposed to be with.
Yeah. And maybe, but I just feel if that was the case, he'd be better off. That just makes me think of him even less than I already do, because it's like, you'd be better off just as her mate trying to, you know, better her versus, like, even if you chose not to be with her, trying to better her versus just being like, ugh, get the fuck away from me, I don't like you. Yeah. Also, mating is very specific. He would also in some way want to be connected to her. I'm more leaning towards at this point that Amarantha may not actually be Faye. And that is more in line with, you know, why I don't think that that could be true.
One day we'll learn more about it, but who knows? I don't know if I think they're mates or not. I feel like we would have gotten a few more signs of that if they were, because there are people who can smell a mating bond on people. I don't know if that only happens, though, if they've, like, done the deed, because I'm pretty sure Azriel can smell the mating bond on Elaine and Lucien. So I'm like, if they were mated, I feel other people would have known too. And it would have been a whole ass thing. So in my mind, I'm just going to tell myself that Amarantha was just a crazy ass bitch who couldn't let this man go.
Yeah. I don't know why him specifically, other than maybe it was because they were childhood friends and she's had this crush her whole life. She doesn't know how to let it go. You know, after she lost her sister, she lost everybody else who was important to her. Maybe that's why she can't, you know, get past it. It's a fun theory. I don't buy into it 100%, but that doesn't mean I'm right. Like I always say, like, if these theories are theories. Yeah, I could be 100% wrong, and it could be like right in a book one day. It's like, oh, by the way, we find out that, I was gonna say, maybe that's why he gets so depressed at some point, but then, like, no, because that's way after, you know, the whole Feyre thing.
Also, you have to remember, mates are supposed to be really rare.
But is it everyone in this book has a mate, or is it the Archeron sisters have mates? Because there's possibly something else going on with the Archeron sisters as well. There's something in play with destiny or fate when it comes to them. I already think this, believe this, because just the fact that they were all human and they were all turned fae, they all have mates, they all have these fated destinies. It's something very specific with the Archeron sisters. How many other people are mated in these books that aren't them?
I'm trying to think. Nothing like super confirmed, but we know Tamlin's dad and his mom were mates.
Right. And Rhysand's parents were mates too.
Yeah. His parents
and
were mates.
Calais and Vivain are mates, I'm pretty sure they say. So, but other than that, it seems like it's happening all the time because these three chicks are, they all have mates, but is it really that popular?
Can you imagine just, like, being in Prithian and then, like, all of a sudden these, like, three human girls are turned into Fae and they take over and you're just like, oh.
Something to that, man.
Yeah, all right.
There's something to it.
All right, let's go ahead and give our big spoiler warning. If you have not read all of the three Sarah J. Maas series, including House of Flame and Shadow, please leave. If you have not read all of ACOTAR, all of Throne of Glass, all of Crescent City, including House of Flame and Shadow, please leave. We will be discussing some theories and connections with these books. So yes, you have 3 seconds.
Bye, guys. We've enjoyed having you here. We'll see you in the next video, but go ahead and bow out now.
All right. Okay. I want to go ahead and just talk about Amarantha because I feel like you might be about to say what I was going to say. Okay. So Amarantha. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to talk about this. So when I was doing my read for this episode, and after reading House of Flame and Shadow, I was like, huh, weird. Amrita is described so similarly to some other characters. She is described as having snow white skin, which in turn set off her ruby lips. But while her ebony eyes shone, there was something that sucked at her beauty. By the way, something is in italics. What does this mean? Okay, and then I will say, in Throne of Glass, Throne of Glass Mae is basically identical to Vesperis, who we meet in House of Flame and Shadow. And Vesperis is described as having black hair, which fell onto the floor, and extremely pale skin that glowed like a full moon. Her lips were in a natural, vibrant red, and her eyes were a crushing blue that glowed. But Maeve is very much described the exact same way that Vesperis is. She still has the red-ass lips, the black hair, the very pale skin. Maeve looks like me if I have violet eyes. I'm over here just thinking, okay, there's a few connections with that, especially Amarantha and Maeve, because stay with me, y'all. Stay with me. Is Amarantha possibly Volg in a way, or some part of Maeve's circle? Because she has some connection to spiders, and so does Vesperis. In ACOTAR, the Adder says to Feyre, "You better hold your tongue, or Milady will do it for you, and her pinchers are not kind." Interesting. And I don't remember what book this was in, and this was pointed out by someone else online. I don't remember who it was. There's a lot of people. I'm so sorry. But someone pointed out online that basically Amarantha was described as having Hibern in her web. And I'm over here like, what the fuck? And then obviously from House of Flame and Shadow, Vesperis is described as coming out of this fucking coffin like a goddamn spider. And we know, like
spider,
like the fucking spiders from Throne of Glass were Maeve spiders. And I'm just like, what does this mean? Is it possible that Amarantha is also a world walker and she was maybe one of her fucking, what, maybe a Volg princess that was trying to take over Prithian? That's just something that I noticed about Amarantha's description, and I was like, okay, I want to bring this up.
And right.
Yep.
Interesting. I wasn't necessarily thinking Volg. I just, something about her made me think not Fae specifically, but that is a really interesting theory. I do like that. It is obviously like they're not all described like that, and obviously they kind of take on the visual that they want to. Maeve doesn't actually look like that. She chooses to look like that. She made herself look like that on purpose. And we don't know about with Vesperis because she's short-lived character. But we do know that when she's killed, she is killed in the same exact way that Maeve is killed. I'm trying to think, when Amarantha gets killed, she, like, Rhys just rips her throat out, right? Or does Tamlin do it? Somebody rips her throat out. Like, Rhys holds her with her power, and I think Tamlin rips her throat out. So I like that theory. And the fact that the whole something that sucked at her beauty, that line definitely is like, something is going on here. And then also, like you said, super pale skin, ruby lips. I definitely, when we first met Vesperis, was like, oh, this bitch looks just like Maeve. For a second, I thought it was Maeve. Now, to be fair, the order that I read this in, Amarantha would have been the first time that I even saw something like this. And it would have been so far away from when I read Throne of Glass for me to even think about the comparison. I don't know if I would have. Plus, Maeve is the only one that's fully fleshed out and we know exactly what she is. But yeah, this is a good little theory. It's very interesting. Yeah. But also, why are her eyes black?
Right. That's why I'm thinking, like, maybe she is not as powerful as Maeve, but maybe she is like a fucking spider, like one of her fucking spiders. Because we do know, like, the Volgs have typically have black eyes.
Right.
I don't know. It's so interesting.
Crazy. I can see her being maybe not actually a Valg princess, but one of her spiders in a human form or something like that. Mm. I could 100% see that because, like I said, why is she not as attractive as the rest of the Fae? She is considered less powerful, but it makes sense for her to be less powerful than the High Lords because they're supposed to be the most powerful Fae. Also, she's tricky, the right hand of the King of Highburn. I got to do some more research into this because this is a good theory. I like it. Something's here. Something's there. I just don't quite 100% know how it connects. But what if
just say it.
The spider that attacked the mercenary, and it wasn't in another world, it was in this world, and one of the spiders got over into this world, and that is who she had the interaction with, and this really is one of the spiders living in this world.
Oh my god, I fucking love that. Okay, side note, if y'all didn't listen to, I think it was our first ACOTAR episode, we were theorizing that the mercenary from the first few chapters was actually bit by one of Maeve's spiders, and that's where her scar comes from. So what if Amarantha was that spider? Because we have confirmation that people from Throne of Glass have come over to Prithian.
Right.
Oh my god.
I'm not saying that that's it, but it's just like, what if that connection is there? We don't know how long ago was the mercenary attacked? We don't know. But an Amarantha obviously has to be a certain age. But who's to say that that spider wasn't living there? And then at some point, maybe Amarantha was a regular person and then the spider took over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
When it says there was something that sucked at her beauty, why is something in italics?
Right. Yeah, that's a dead giveaway something. That it means something more. And the spider references and the pincher, what if it really is a spider who's possessed a fey body? And what if Amarantha was supposed to be more beautiful, but like the spider is literally sucking at her beauty?
Right.
Oh, I don't know. God, why are her eyes black? She's not as powerful as a full-on Valg, because at least a Valg royalty, because otherwise it would take more than that to kill her. I like where it's going. Feel like there's definitely something here. I haven't quite worked out what it is, but all of those are fun theories.
Yeah. Okay. I have one more, guys. This one I've seen online so much. All right. Ooh. So this one's about Feyre's name origin. So this kind of popped up at me during my reread, because when Feyre gives Amarantha her name, Amarantha says, an old name from our earliest dialects. The theory is that the Archerons come from the Fae. There's Fae in their blood, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's why their dad was able to work with the Fae really well. And also, it's like, why did they live so close to the wall? There's something there, but wait, stay with me. I have more, guys. Okay. So, the bone carver in Akawar says to Feyre, quote, clever, that Fey warrior, her bloodline is long gone, though a trace still runs through some human line. So, he's saying that there was a Fey warrior whose blood still runs through a human line. And what if that human line is the Archerons? And again, what if that's why their dad is able to work with the Fae so well? Because we know that he traded with the Fae and they live so close to the wall. And then also, this user on TikTok under the name Abby J. Reads was theorizing that Feyre's mom is a seer. And I was like, okay, let me think about this really quick. And some of the comments were like, just blew my fucking mind. And people are saying, maybe that's why Feyre's mom decided to make that deal or that vow with Feyre, because she's able to see that she was going to be the one to change all this. And also she knows how important and pretty much how fae bargains are like fucking laws. So she knows that importance of it. And then her mom also being a seer would make sense, because this also goes with the theory that Nessa will become either the High Queen or the High Lady of the Dusk Court. Maybe her mom saw that that was going to happen to Nesta, and that's why she was prepping her so goddamn intensely to be this person who was going to be royal someday. And then maybe Elaine, when she went into the cauldron, became a seer because her mom was. Mm. And that's why Nesta was able to block Tamlin's glamour, because they're fae. And for some reason, she's able to put up a wall. Elaine probably doesn't, just because she doesn't know. And I don't know if Feyre would have known either. And it's also noted that Feyre notices magic so much, which is just interesting. But I wanted to bring that up. That was so much, guys. I'm so sorry. That was like so much to throw at you. But yeah, so basically, summary. The Archerons come from possibly this Fae warrior that the Bone Carver was talking about. And possibly the Archeron mom was a seer.
I definitely am here for the Archeron sisters coming from the Fae back in the day. That makes a lot of sense to me, especially because, like I said, there clearly is something going on with fate here where they are clearly destined for something else. Yeah. It's too weird that all three of them were human. All three of them got changed to Fae through various means. All three of them are mated to these powerful people, because Lucien may not be a High Lord yet, but he is, in my thought process, he's going to be a High Lord one way or the other, whether it's taking over the Spring Court or it's taking over for Helion. He's destined to be a High Lord. Cassian is referred to as a Lord and as a Prince multiple times throughout the series. I don't know in what capacity that's going to happen yet, but he is referred to outside of just a warrior. He is referred to specifically as a Lord and a Prince multiple times. I don't care if it's the Prince of Bastards, it's still a Prince. It's a royal title. There's something there. Obviously, Feyre is mated to the most powerful High Lord in history and now has a child with him. All right, there's that. Crazy, right? Also, we know that the cauldron turned the two Archeron sisters. And all we know is that when the third person went in there to get turned, they were not turned fae. They were turned into a crone or whatever. Now, they chalk that up to it being because of what Nesta stole from the cauldron and the cauldron was pissed. But all we know is that somebody went in and the effect didn't come out the right way. What if that isn't to do with what Nesta took from the cauldron and more to do with the fact that she wasn't supposed to be fae or whatever? Like, it could have something to do with that. So it just very much makes sense to me that these three bitches were always destined, like, this was going to happen one way or the other. The seer thing, that one's hard for me because I could totally see that making a lot of sense. I'm not writing it off as impossible. But also, just like, the Archeron mom was such a fucking horrible character that I would hate for her to have been able to see the fucking future and that be how she decided to prep her kids.
The only thing I will say is maybe it was a Doctor Strange moment where she was like, okay, I've seen all these things that could happen, but there's only one way that everyone will be fine and this world will be okay. Because we know that there's probably going to be a big war coming up soon with the crossovers that are happening. Mm-hmm. So it's like maybe she saw this one way. She's like, okay, I'm going to have to do this. Like, I'm going to have to make Nesta into this person who's going to have to rule one day. I'm going to have to make Feyre make me a promise when I'm dying. You have to take care of the family. Yeah. And that makes so much sense, because I was over here like, why would you ask your youngest daughter to be that person? This kind of explains it a little bit more. Maybe there's something there, but that's also, I mean, it's definitely a crack theory, and I really love this person who fucking put this up on TikTok, because I was just like, I love that. That's so fun.
Yeah, and also over this portion of chapters, so there's a point where Nesta's blaming their dad for their mother's death, and Feyre says, like, no, he loved her, and she loved him. There's definitely, like I said, some more to be explored there. I'm not writing it off at all. I like that theory. I might actually be paying a little bit more attention on my reread for like different connections for that and whatnot. But it's very, very interesting. And I've always had questions about the Acheron mom because she's a very complicated character as well. She's not mentioned a whole lot. And when she is, she's not painted in the best light. But this is an interesting theory.
Right. I think it would have to mean that if all of that's true, it would have to mean that their mom is the one that has the Fae heritage, because it would just make sense. Like, right. Her dad.
Right. But what if his connections like somehow come from that being like, maybe that's how he met the mom. How did he even get tangled up with the Fae in the first place? I don't know, but a lot of questions.
There's a lot of questions about that. Yeah, her mom's definitely a mystery, and I definitely have some feelings towards their mom, but if she was a seer and she had to do all this in order to, like, save her family, like, save the fucking world, I can kind of understand it. I'm hoping that's what it was.
Always us with our crazy cat crack theories. We do hope that you guys enjoyed those. And if you did, please stay tuned for future episodes because we will be having many more. We hope that you enjoyed our discussion today of ACOTAR. And in our next episode, we will be continuing our breakdowns with chapters 36 through 46. Email/DM us anything you'd like us to touch on relevant to those chapters specifically in our next deep dive. Also, in some other news, we will be launching our Patreon soon. More details on that to come. And finally, again, please like, comment, subscribe, review, rate, and share us with your bookish friends. If you've made it this far, we like to think that you're probably enjoying yourself. So please help us grow. Also, give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok. We do have some great content over there, some fun different polls, different reels, funny things, you know, book content of all sorts. We will be having some content coming out that is not necessarily relevant to the Massverse soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And we just want to say thank you as always. You guys have been so incredibly amazing and supportive, and we cannot say thank you enough. We can't wait for you to join us in our next episode. And as always, we want to leave you with a quote, and I think it's only fitting that we pick this one. I love you, thorns and all. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, bye.